This is episode 169 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, Dio Morales, and today I'm joined by Marcel, not quite the Asajj meta yet, Manzano.
Yet. They need 6 more points, and then we'll be Asajj 24-7. Or 6-7-11-24-7-24.
Numbers? I know nothing.
6-5. Every day of the week.
Yes.
Every day of the year. There you go. Big math, big brain.
William, gotta be fancy, Hagwood.
Yeah, I've came back. I gotta be looking good.
That's right. Look at that haircut, man. For those of you who are only listening, you are missing out. I'm just saying. And Ryan, if the first thing you do post game is check your dice results, you're doing something wrong. Stanisewski.
Analyze everything else first, and then we can talk about your dice results.
There we go. Hot takes. Do notice Dion and Ryan rocking the official GSP faction shirts available on GoldSquadronPodcast.com, all right? We promise we did not coordinate outfits, probably. But before we jump into that, we have some news. We got news. We officially have cancellation from FFG on organized play for the rest of the year. We knew it was coming. It's official now. There's no doubts. There's no questions. It is here. I know that we're sad, but it's to be expected. Now, a couple of interesting things in here. They differentiate two different types of events and what's happening here. So we have postponed events and events on hiatus. So postponed events are ones that essentially the kits are out there already, and when it's safe in the area, go ahead and run them. So that's store championships and grand championships, and then events that are a big question mark because the kits aren't out there are all the ones you see listed there. For ones that matter for us would be System Opens, World Championships, Continental Championships, and Prime Championship. So now a lot of people were wondering if we would get official word. There it is right there from the horse's mouth. Next piece of news, patrons, real quick. If you haven't seen, I posted a tease to something that's coming in the future on Patreon for only patrons to see. So if you haven't looked at it, look at it. And that's all I'm going to say there. Let's get in to our main topic. We're talking about Corellia. If you didn't know, this past weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we had 218 players duking it out to become the Corellian champion. And, of course, trying to get that top 32 in order to get that Coruscant invite to make it to the last invite-only event for the Galactic Championships. Today, we're going to be going through the top 16 list, discussing what did we get right in our guesses, which were before this event this weekend. What did we get wrong? And everybody's asking about the championship list and how to beat it. So we're going to kind of theorize right now. Now, this is early hot takes. We don't have actual data on this. This is definitely just some theorizing that we have out there, and we'll see how it shakes out. So let's go ahead and start. Should we start at 16 and work our way backwards? What do we think? Yay? Nay?
Yes, 16.
Starting at 16. So person number 16 was, let's take a peek at the ladder here real quick, was Adam Kempers. Adam Kempers. Let's go ahead and get it started, Ryan. Adam Kempers.
I'd unmute. Okay, so Adam, I believe here. Sorry, my control F for find is giving me issues right now. Thanks, PDF. I will use off Twitch. Adam's been running this, I've seen it before, Adam's been running this CIS list quite commonly for a while. He loves his bombardment drones. Mm-hmm. So we have the Separatist Alliance, General Grievous in the Bevel Lab 22 with Impervium and Solus 1. 2 bombardment hyenas with proximity mines and delayed fuses. These are the 3 pip hyenas that can drop bombs and mines forward. And then three Trade Federation drones, all of them with Discords, and only two of them with struts at 200 points.
So we know that Adam's been flying a variation of this for a while. This is his baby. He likes his swarms. Seeing another appearance in the top 16, another great performance. So even though this is some of stating the obvious, what's some of the things that happened with the points change we recently had, and why is it still good? Because we did have a couple things go up.
Yeah, the base Trade Federation drones went up each by a point. So he lost 3 points. So he had to... I forget what he may have done with the last 2 points. I think it was probably Crackshot on Grievous and had a one-point bid mm-hmm. in his previous list. And he had struts on probably everybody. So he had to not only lose the one bid point, lose Crackshot, and one of the grappling struts, which is definitely something you can live with. His bread and butter is the bombardment drones. And what better to align with bombardment drones than more things that drop out forward, like Discord missiles. And then Grievous just saying, hey, you know, if you ignore me, you let all these drones do whatever they want. But also, if you come, if you go after me, come after me, droids get free. Go after the droids, Grievous gets all his mods that he wants offensively from being flanking.
Awesome, yeah. So overall, an absolutely great list. What were you going to say, Marcel?
Yeah, I played Adam in round 6. We were both playing to see who made the cut, and we know who did. But it was funny because he had, I was flying Count Zuvio, dropping proximity mine out of the front and back.
Yeah.
And he's like, I see your Count Zuvio, and I'll raise you 2 bombardment drones. So that was funny. Funny thing happened, though. He dropped the proximity mine, and Count Zuvio was it, and with a delayed fuse, so he flies over it. Count Zuvio flew around and tractored him right back on it so he can get back on his... that was like the only good thing that happened. Other than that, he crushed me.
Now, we're going to come back to this list because Adam is one of only 2 players that, looking at the scores, actually gave Bohan a run for his money. By the way, spoilers, Bohan Lee, champion of the Galactic, of Corellia. So we'll come back to Adam. There's going to be some correlation here, and we're going to find it real interesting. All right, let's continue here. Joel Springle, take it, Will.
All right, let me pull it up here. I know. All right, I want to make sure I had it right. It's what Octocon was flying. Mm-hmm. It's a scum 6 ship. You have the 2 Fang Fighters, and then 4 Cartel Spacer M3As, 2 Attractor, 2 with Ion. It's a lot of agility, a lot of ship. We've seen it with success. Once you get one of those, it's the control of it. Those control cannons mm-hmm. can just change the game. The Fang Fighters are just very resilient.
Absolutely, yeah. So seeing this list make another appearance, really, really good. We talked about it. Octocon flew it quite a bit. We're going to move on here to our first appearance of a First Order list in the top 16. Take it, Marcel. This is Lyle Winfield.
Yeah. Helps if I unmute. So we got First Order with Hollow, with Proud Tradition, and 3 Sainar Janus Engineer TIE Silencer. So they went down in points, and he took good advantage of it. So that comes in at 199 points. Mm-hmm. Hollow likes a bunch of friendlies to be able to toss those tokens around to, especially those stress tokens, so to keep Proud Tradition active. And the silencers are very good at shedding that stress, so really... really good list. Really good list. Usually, it's like I personally fly with 4 TIE SFs, this definitely seems like an upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was one of the lists that I don't want to say that we called it. I think a lot of people suspected this to be one of the top first order lists. Ryan, you had talked about, you know, your ratio of you either have red pokey bits or black pokey bits, right? Depending on which ships you were bringing, but a really solid squad. If you haven't explored it yet and you want to take a look at first order, this is a great place to start. I would love to pick Lyle's brain and go back and look at some of his matchups to see what he faced against or what are maybe some other good meta lists that he played against. We unfortunately did not get an opportunity to see this on stream this weekend, but in appearance shows, it proves the point. It is a good list. Let's continue here, Ryan, with Jason Miller, who we did see on stream with a Galactic Empire list.
Yep, and a very familiar one at that. This is the Rax Sloan with the four Academy ties that we saw, I believe, the exact same loadout win the Sydney Space Jam, and a list that was in high contention for me to bring for this past weekend, but I had other things I needed to attend to, thus could not play. But it is Rear Admiral Sheeranu with Ruthless, Admiral Sloan, 000, Darth Vader, BT-1 and Dauntless, and then four Academy TIE Fighters, and a one-point bid, which that bid can matter at times when you go up against other lists that have I-1s that don't tend to bid too much. Your Academies can become blockers for sure.
Yeah, now the Sloan archetype was definitely a consistent one for Empire. Essentially, you were either bringing Aces or Sloan. Sloan having that ability to double stress after you kill one of those generics you have out there. It adds mods. Just really good control. Take a look at, if you haven't seen the post recordings, if you're one of our Twitch subscribers, go ahead, take a look. The videos are going to be being uploaded starting probably Wednesday or Thursday. I got to get a couple other assets over to Nick, our editor. But yeah, this is going to be something that's not going away. And there's going to be a really great variation that we're going to hit here pretty soon. Here's our next Empire squad, and it's the other archetype that we would expect here, coming from Mark Grauberg. Take it, Will.
All right, I'm pulling it up right now.
And Mark didn't put a space in his name, just in case when you're searching.
That's what's messing me up. Mm-hmm.
While he's trying to find it, I'll shout him out. It's a local Michigan buddy.
Oh, okay. I found it. Oh, I know this list. All right, so. Darth Vader, fire control system, afterburners. Classic Darth Vader right now. Passive sensors too expensive, so everyone's going classic. Fire control system. And he goes triple ace with Soontir Fel and Grand Inquisitor. Soontir Fel's got Crackshot and Targeting Computer. So we've actually seen, I saw a lot more Soontir Fel than I thought I would.
Why do we think that is? What happened that Soontir became more desirable in this? Is it just the I-6? I mean, I can't think of anything at I-6 or I-5 that really changed that made you think Soontir. Is it the price? What do we think?
Well, it's less about the fact that Soontir is more desirable. It's that Whisper doesn't fit the way you'd like her to anymore.
There you go.
I agree with that.
Tossing up those watermelons. Good job, boys. All right, Evan Pomerantz, this is Modest Orange Gaming, bringing the only other First Order squad in the top 16. Take a look at it, Marcel.
All right, you've got Quick Draw, my favorite, with Fanatical and Special Forces Gunner, and then he's got 1, 2, 3 TIE Fighter FOs, Epsilon Squadron, and 2 Zeta Squadron TIE SFs. So it's 6 ships. Backed by a pretty big gun, Quick Draw, and coming in at 197. So it gives him a little bit of a bid for either choosing to get the blocks in with the initiative once or choosing to have Quick Draw move last if the bid's not there for the other team.
Yeah, so, nice solid 6-ship list. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Yeah, that's kind of like what the First Order's been, right? They've been just efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do anything particularly amazing.
Right.
But they're solid. They're steady. They're kind of like what the Rebels used to be, I think, where the Rebels just had that one way of playing, and First Order's kind of filling that in where they're just kind of independently efficient, especially their generics, and you don't necessarily want forward to victory because you've got the silencers that go fast, but it's still kind of just spam some generics and make it work.
Next, we have Doug Howe. I'll take a look at this one. Galactic Empire lists another variation here. Echo in the TIE Phantom with passive sensors, Fifth Brother, the previously desired Whisper loadout, but with we got essentially being able to fit this in with two Delta Squadron Defenders. Now, in the matchup that Doug played on stream, I will say that it was one that the Defenders went down pretty hard along with Echo, and people started asking the question, would it really be that bad if we could fit three Defenders in a list? The answer is yes. We don't want that life. Trust me. We're trying to save you, especially those of you who never played First Edition. You don't want this. Okay. But another just solid performance. The Defenders, their job is to stay tanky. They get that free evade every turn as long as they're doing a three or faster maneuver. They get those K turns, essentially focus evade every turn. And the most threatening thing about them is the fact that they're initiative one, so they know every time, assuming that they are the first player versus other initiative ones, that they're going to fit that K-turn or not. So just a great squad. And, of course, Echo is fantastic at filling the space. The what's the word I'm trying to come up with here? Filling I'm going to say the achievement gap. Sorry, I've been writing a lot of teaching papers. But Echo does something that the Defenders can't do. It just moves in a completely different way and can really cover the flank for them very well. And now, Ryan, Rodrigo Denicol brought a list, and he was one of the other players who gave Bohan a run for his money. Very tight game in their matchup. Let's go ahead and look at this list.
So we have the Bug Squad of the Petronaki Arena Aces, and all six of them for Nantex class starfighters. We saw a major shift in points in these guys, being that Ensnare is a higher percentage of their overall cost if you were to take Ensnare, so the base chassis is a lot cheaper. So Rodrigo has six of them, all with crackshot and all of them with marksmanship. They each come in at 33 points, so it's 198. We'll see later a different variation of this. There's going to be likely many variations of this going on in the future, but kind of a little bit of a preview into my thoughts on this list. I kind of see them and how you would play them as how you used to play and maybe still play 5 A-Wings, in that if you have crackshot on a predominant amount of them, your goal is to do a lot of upfront jousty type damage and hide a lot of your MOV in trades because you have a lot more individual ships with 3 agility. And then as you speed by them, you use your arcs for the Antex. It's rotating to the side, not the back, to keep that time on target as best as possible.
It's similar. I know that they move differently, but it's very similar to the strength of the A-Wing, right? Of the Resistance A-Wing, being able to just keep that time on target. And the movement on these Nantex, the argument here, here's a question. Let's just throw it out there now. Who has more time on target, or is it the same versus a Resistance A-Wing? What do we think?
I think these guys have more time on target. One of them, because they have an extra ship out there. But let's say you do 6 initiative once, then you've got more time on target because if you bump, you can still get your arc where you want it. Where in an A-Wing, if you bump, you're stuck with the one arc in the one direction.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue it's almost... So the side arcs definitely benefit the Nantex. The problem the Nantex have is if they want to kind of reposition, by I say kind of, it's because it's generated completely by the tractor token. is they have barrel roll available to them, a normal type one, except if you can't fail this barrel roll. If you accidentally roll yourself onto a rock or debris, you are stuck there.
Oopsie!
and on top of that, your boost is only straight. A-Wings have a huge advantage of that bank boost. That gets arcs around very well and helps get away and just like boost and rotate your arc to the rear. So I think it's very comparable. And I foresee a lot of learning if people try out this list, because if you want to reposition, you are now 2 agility.
You're 2 agility, and you have to make sure that you're managing the arc placement. That's something that the very first time you play one of these Nantexts. So for those of you who don't know, I'll go ahead and pull up this card so that we can just take a look at it. Sorry, I didn't have that ready to go. How do we spell that? P-E-T? Yes. Bad at typing. Here we go. Slide it over. Nope, that's Discord. Grab the wrong tab. Here we go. So, Petronaki Ace right here. The pinpoint tractor ray. You cannot rotate your arc, your turret arc, to the back. And after you execute a maneuver, you may gain 1 tractor token to perform a rotate action. So, that means that you have to be able, in order to move, you must rotate the arc. And in order to rotate the arc, you must move. Like, both, there is no way out of it no matter what, because the actual action bar is only focus and evade. So if you're planning, if you have your arc to the right and you make a right turn and you want to barrel roll out, you're not going to have that right side shot anymore. So you have to plan accordingly and really choose your path carefully. Let's continue here. Richard Owen III, the only Republic list in the top 16. The only one. Take a look at it, Will.
All right. We have Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Delta 7. It's right. He's got the 7B calibration, so he's or configuration, so that he can have more primary attack dice for reduced agility. He's got R4P, which I believe that's the new cheap generic that you charges. Man, I can't paraphrase that. Let me pull it up.
R4P?
Anyways.
R4P? Is that what you're talking about?
Contraband?
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah, well, it's opposite of contraband. But so it says, before you execute a blue maneuver, you may spend 1 charge. If you do, while you execute that maneuver, reduce its difficulty. So it's the same price as R4 these days, but R4 doesn't cover 3 banks and 5 forwards, which is really what Obi-Wan would rather clear his stress on. And you're probably only K-turn 2 times a game anyways, so it's probably only 2 turns that you end up having to clear stress. So I think it's a value buy now. Very good use of the points drop for that. But he brings it with classic 104th Battalion pilots. That's the ARC 170 generic at 42 points. So Earths are at a lot of beef. They take up a lot of space for blocking as well. And Obi-Wan just lingers in the back, shooting stuff. Good.
Just hanging out. You know, something that's funny about this list, so congratulations to Richard making it in the top cut here, or into the top 16, is that in his list, the only thing that went down in points was R4P. That's it. Everything else either stayed the same or got more expensive. So it's just really, really interesting just looking at it. It's an archetype that we haven't seen too much successfully. This makes me question whether or not is this just a list that Richard's flown a lot, so he's familiar with it, like his skill, or is it something that could emerge? And I see Ryan, you're shaking your head saying that's what I think it is.
Yeah, he's a former local now. I was told recently he had moved out of, at least out of our area. I'm not sure out of Michigan completely, but yes, he has flown his fair share of beefy Republic plus Obi. He's had ARCs, he's done Y-Wings, he's done a ton of it. So he is very familiar with the Obi is my Jedi, and I have beef Republic.
Excellent. Now, this is a fun one. I'm going to actually take this one. So, Beanish Gillen here, who actually just recently started playing X-Wing, brought double aggressors to the top 16 out of a 218 field. Absolutely amazing. And specifically brought it because he quoted me and he said, Dione, I'm bringing this because you said this was the worst chassis in the game. I can't say that I stand completely corrected. I'll say that it's the second worst chassis in the game. The worst would be the Tie Aggressor. But, Beanish, you got skills, my man. Absolutely just amazing performance. So, let's take a look at these. They are exactly the same. We got AG88 B and D with elusive advanced sensors, auto blasters, ion cannon, proton bombs, contraband cybernetics, shield upgrade, and the IG-2000 title. So the idea here is I can still do actions before I do sloops using that advanced sensor or bumping. It doesn't really matter. Elusive is really easy to get back because you are okay doing red maneuvers again with advanced sensors. You got those double taps because of IG-88B and IG-88D helps you get into other spots. The proton bombs were something that in his matchup could have made a bigger difference. And I'm curious to pick his brain and see how much those affected his games, because I would suspect with the meta coming around that I think is going to be around the corner, I think we're going to see an increase in bombs. But in his matchup that we actually got on stream where he lost and was taken out of the top cut, he had to play against a Rack Sloan that had Death Troopers on it, and it absolutely decimated him. But that is something for another day. Go ahead, watch that recording back later on. Let's continue here. I forgot. Who am I on right now? Next person, take Michael Grebe with our first Rebel Alliance appearance. It's Marcel.
The great Rebel Alliance. Kashyyyk Defenders. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4 Kashyyyk Azatoks because they came down in points. And they're not the old Azatoks they used to be. And Sabine ran TIE Fighter. Now, I'm surprised with Sabine. I mean, Sabine's great getting into spots with Intimidation. But at 31 points, the 31-point Intimidation ship is pretty good. She can be anywhere she wants. And then it gives the Kashyyyk Defenders just something juicy to aim at and try and kill. Yeah, it's just a lot of hull, a lot of... a lot to chew through and a lot of arcs. And I think I saw the match with Paul Heaver and Ali playing against each other where Paul Heaver took 4 or 5 of these. And
mm-hmm.
I think it was 4. He took 4 of these plus something.
I think it was this exact list.
That exact list? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he wrecked Ali's day with it. So, yeah, it's a good list.
I think this is another one that we're going to see quite a bit. What are your thoughts on this Rebel list in a matchup versus 6 Nantext? Do you think it has a good chance?
This is tough. I think it does because it keeps arcs, just like the Nantext have a way of getting arcs. They have a way of also getting arcs, and actually being at low initiative probably helps some of it because it makes the Nantext kind of wary about spending their focus on offense,
mm-hmm.
because then whichever spent their focus on offense, that's the one that you focus down on,
mm-hmm.
Focus fire on. Sabine, probably not as big of a deal because even if they bump with the Intimidation, they'll just factor themselves out of it. I mean, if they're going to have one less agility, might as well have one less agility on their own terms.
Right.
I probably give it to the Nantext, but it'll take a minute for them to chew through these. And also, you can always, and you know, once they start reinforcing the Kashyyyk Defenders, then it gets really, really tough to.
Well, one of the things, when we saw Michael play this in one of our games, he actually, besides one time while running away, never reinforced, only focus. Every time. And the thought behind that was, if only one of my ships is getting shot, I am potentially wasting 3 other actions when it comes to specifically to the Kashyyyk Defender. So he took the focuses on all of them, says, I know you're going to shoot into one, but now I'm going to have better offensive shots. because of my focus token. Because there's no other way for those Kashyyyk defenders to mod those dice. So it's an interesting. I do like the fact that they have the availability of reinforce. That might be able to give the Nantex some fits, depending on the situation, especially if you have those Wookiees repositioning. Let's continue here, Ryan. Let's take a look at Ian Becker's resistance list. First appearance of resistance in the top cut. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I am, yes. It is the only resistance list in the top 16.
All right. So this is... top 16. Derp. So Ian Becker... is bringing a very jousty type squad here, incorporating Jess Pava with BB-8. Got a red squad, two red squadron experts with heroic, and Finn with heroic and Rose with nothing. Just taking five ships. Jess likes having friends around. Rose likes having friends around. Finn likes being an annoyance with just heroic. I talked about that last week or 2 weeks ago, that slim Finn we hadn't seen a lot of, but here we go. Good usage here. I didn't mention it, but all the X-Wings have their S foils and they all took jamming beam. Doubt jamming beam ever came into play, but people have their stories. A few of these can spread out. Like the only two ships that really like to stay next to each other are Rose and Jess. If Ian decides, I think I can joust better than my opponent, can predominantly stay kind of tight together and see if he can force a joust. If Ian feels the need to spread out a little bit, these X-Wings have the mobility to do it. Finn probably stays moderately close to Rose or Jess, just doesn't have the same maneuverability to boost or barrel without doing a blue maneuver if it wants actions next turn. But just quality shots, solid pieces, and it obviously worked well.
Excellent. Next one, another Imperial Ace list. We'll take a look at this one. We actually get some Whisper in this list from Renato Flores.
Taking a similar archetype and switching out your heavy hitter. Keeping the pairing of a passive sensors, Fifth Brother Whisper, and Grand Inquisitor, but mixing out the typical Vader for red line with proton torpedoes and proximity mines. Here's my question. Is Redline an ace? Yes or no?
Not in this build. Yes, go ahead, say it, Ryan. You got it.
Yeah, so me and Dion are on the same wavelength. Advanced sensors is what makes Redline an ace.
Okay. So this would be the joust, the Redline. Redline you can't ignore. Which will Whisper and Inquisitor to the flanks.
Absolutely. And in Renato's games, the one that we did get on stream, he actually played against Bohan. And the issue that happened in that game was the fact that, unfortunately, Redline got cornered. All right, he flew him into a corner. Now, Redline can blow some ships away, and he did. He one-shot a ship, absolutely gone. But then the rest of the swarm ate him up. And then he traded essentially 70 points for a single ship, which was not worth 70 points. I think this is an archetype that people will try. It is definitely my style. I like Whisper rather than Soontir. But the red line not being able to have advanced sensors in there does hurt a lot of your options. So you got to make sure that you get those proton torpedoes to hit something if he's going to be worth his points.
I mean, is this a thing where you just bite the bullet and swap Whisper for Echo?
That is a great point. Do you think? Go ahead.
I was actually thinking of chopping for a red line, but I also play a pretty aggressive Whisper who's out there just to target lock stuff, which is what red line could do.
It's all very true, very true. We got a couple more lists here. We're getting towards the top. Paul Adler, who won that game versus Doug Howe. That was on stream. Another Imperial Ace list here. Marcel?
Yep, you got that Echo instead of Whisper. And comes in at 63 points, so a lot cheaper. But with different upgrades, he's got Outmaneuver and Afterburner, so he's trying to get, you know, use that mobility to get around people and just turn himself into a wedge. Mm-hmm. And then you got Darth Vader with the all too common Afterburners and Fire Control System, which works. And Sunterfell with actually a, you know, Lone Wolf, which you don't see that often anymore. But if you fly it right, it's really good. I'm not sure why you don't. I think maybe you don't see it as much because there just isn't. You don't fly at the same distance as you used to, because I think in 1.0 you would try to take advantage of the afterburners and other things, and now you don't take advantage of the afterburners because you don't. Well, for the people that don't know, 1.0 afterburners meant you got a free evade when you were auto arc or at range 3, not the this version of afterburners. So I think since
you're talking about auto thrusters.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Wrong car.
In 1.0, you're taking advantage of the auto thrusters and you're keeping everybody away at range 3, getting free evades. Lone Wolf probably made a little more sense. But now a lot of the arc dodging happens in close quarters and knife fighting, where you're just getting up close to range 1 and then just barrel rolling or boosting out of arc. And Lone Wolf maybe doesn't trigger as much. But yeah, that's a card that's an upgrade I don't see very often. And it comes in at 197. It's 6-6 with a very mean 4.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. All right, we're getting to our top two here. Steve Cutillo. I said this wrong yesterday. Cutleo, I think, is what it's supposed to be. I'm thinking his name too fancy. Rear Admiral Sharanu. So this is another Sloan rack, but with a different variation and one that I love. He's out of Denver, and I know quite a few of his Denver crew had been messaging me and saying, make sure to tell people he's been flying this for a while. He brought in some experience, which it absolutely helped get him as far as he is. So we have rack with Swarm Tactics, Admiral Sloan, Death Troopers, Agile Gunner, Shield Upgrade, and Dauntless, and 3 Alpha Squadron pilots. Those are the Initiative 1 interceptors. Some really cool tech here. So Swarm Tactics able to take one of those interceptors, bump them up to Initiative 5, have an opportunity to try to initiative kill some other ships. And this was the Death Troopers we were talking about that was giving people fits, because it forces you to hold on to those stress tokens at range 0 to 1. The Alphas are great blockers. It's really easy to lock you in. And if you can't get rid of those stress, you're not taking actions. You can't K-turn. It's a bad day. And also an appearance of Agile Gunner, a card that went down significantly in points in the last points update. It allows you to, at the end of the turn, get a free rotate, and it's not an action, so you can even do it while stressed. Really, really great, great list. Was really cool to play. We think we got it on stream twice. I would suggest watching those videos because I think people are going to be giving it a shot. And last but not least, we have Bohan's list. Go ahead, take it, Ryan.
So we have another variation of the 6 Petronaki Arena Aces. Starting to just call them Paces, just for short.
All right.
Of the Nantex Starfighters. This time, while all of them have crack shot instead of a bunch of marksmanship, it's 3 of them have Predator. Instead of and maintaining the 2-point bid and not going for 4 Predator, so just having that small bid that'd probably beat out other I-4s, maximize those bullseyes as best as possible. And Bohan's a great player, flew well from what I heard, and we'll see going forward who else can pick this up correctly.
Yeah, so the difference between this list and Rodrigo's list is the fact that on Rodrigo's, all of them have marksmanship, which is that 1 point that allows you to shift a focus to a crit in the bullseye, which you're using the bullseye all the time on these guys. So in the mirror match, it was a close one. We know that Bohan wins. I'd be curious to know who won the roll-off there. Now, I know I wore my Separatist shirt because looking at the standings, not only did Separatists win Corellia, but if you look at Bohan's run and also at Rodrigo's, the faction that had the best chance to beat him every time and actually had the best scores against these Nantex squads were other Separatist squads. It was really interesting. So there was a Vulture Swarm in there with some of those bombing shenanigans that Adam had, and then another six Nantex. Now, this leads us into two people had questions of the week that related to this, and I think this is a very natural segue into what we need to talk about. This is going to be the next, at least for the next couple weeks, because we do have our next Galactic Championship qualifier in 2 weeks. This is what people are talking about. Six Nantex, oh my gosh, it got way cheaper. It dropped by, how many points was the actual drop? I remember saying it on stream.
It was like eight or something, eight times.
Each, right?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Each.
I think the list is like a 240-something point list or something like that. 48 they have. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
it's crazy. It's basically an extra ship and a half.
Yeah. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. So, Petronaki, there you go. Will's probably going to beat me to it. What is it, Will?
It's eight. Some fact went down by nine.
Yeah. So, just a huge chunk of points. So, the question is, first, did they go too far? Did they go too far? Or like what's going to be the reaction that top players are going to have saying, listen, if this is the meta monster, what am I bringing to either counter this or be safe around it, like have a chance?
So I was thinking about this a lot since I also, not only that, because I also saw the four Nantex loaded out like this plus, you know, Grievous. That was on stream a little bit. I saw one on stream, and also there was, you know, I've seen it around other, like, on Facebook. People have been sharing versions of it. So you got the four with Grievous or some other support ship. You can have four with, you know, a couple Discord missiles, because Discord missiles are still good. So with this, with Bohan's list specifically, like, you, I think whoever wins the roll off, or whoever wins the bid with these initiative force, is going to be a big deal. So there might be like a race to the bottom, because you get to reposition based on where they are. You get to set up your bullseyes, not theirs, if you're going against the mirror match. And just getting rid of the predators alone, that brings you down to 192. So not only is it a super cheap list, you can still get all six of them with crack shot and 8 point bid. You know, get them all the way to 192 before you have to start messing with the crack shots to get below that. So I think you're going to see a race to the bottom in order to figure out a way to get them moving last against other initiative force.
Okay.
I think you're going to get a lot of not as good players flying it, or not as players who have not practiced it enough flying it to where they're going to mess it up, and they're going to make it look like not as good of a list as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think you're going to get a lot more people trying to fly Initiative 5 or Initiative 6 to try to arc dodge and get around them.
All right. Will, what do you think the reaction will be? What's another way we could take a stab at defeating these guys?
Well, there are a bunch of ships who don't have shields. I want to hook proton bombs at sure. The simulator.
Yeah, trajectory that, simulator.
Spook them. Even a seismic launching on mount could do it as well. I'm not sure. I mean, we were talking about the bombardment drones pulling mines out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, because if you're in a position where they can't do anything about it and you're just dropping mines on them, or at least closing off some space, that could be big. And what are your thoughts, Ryan? What is one of the possible meta reactions to this six ship list?
Overreaction.
There it is.
It's common. It's common, right?
Oh, yeah.
We see the next big thing, couple people jumped on it, so it had good success and good players took it. At minimum, the chassis and the fact that you what's good for these ships is you have six I-4s on the board that have the potential to set up three die attacks, range one being four. There's bullseye, and we know that's very particular, and that's something that's not always super reliable to line up at I-4, but with the good mix they have going is that because it's six ships and they have a turret type mechanic, basically, is that there's enough of them on the board to have time on target against aces or lower ship count lists that have higher initiative. But because they're I-4 and they have that little bit of repositioning and punching power with the bullseye, that they can line up against lower initiative or spamming ships. So they're in that nice amount of ships plus good initiative.
Mm-hmm.
But that also still means that from what I've seen, these guys love keeping their turret arc pointed forward as the first engagement is being created. They want to limit the chance to need to barrel or boost, forcing their arc to turn, meaning all they have pointed at their enemy is the bullseye, which is something that's more difficult to line up. So when you play against these, the goal should be trying to make these guys shift around as much as possible and not making it easy just to use their maneuver templates to get into the fight. Now, granted, you know, if you wait a couple turns, they have a few turns to move their turret arc one way for a barrel, then move it back the next turn if they wanted to barrel or boost. But forcing the decision making on that and making them move by barrel and boost makes that, you know, arc pointed forward for the engagement turn, because they want it the turn before. They don't want to have to turn their arc the same turn because they're at their minus agility. They want to start the snowball effect of maintaining their agility and threatening with easy shots out the front and then spread out, turn arcs to the side, and then force you to pick a direction where, sure, they could start shooting them at two agility, but they're not shooting all of them. They're not pointing at all of them. So oddly, I think certain aces might still do all right against these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're good at splitting up and closing and forcing these guys to move around more and split up and use their tractor to barrel, tractor to boost, to get in situations where they can feel like they're threatening the aces, but it does still leave them more vulnerable. And there may be squads that don't joust as that these guys don't joust as well against because they still need to line up the bullseye. So if you have a jousting squad that doesn't need to stay close to each other, they can do a little bit of a spread, meaning that those bullseyes, when those Petronaki aces want to line up, it's a little more difficult to pinpoint where they want to go. And again, forcing them to use those barrel rolls or straight boosts to put their bullseyes where they want it, or make them, like, it may be a bad idea to do it. So it's like you're putting that decision making on them to balance your agility for better attack.
Absolutely. 100%. Now, go ahead, Marcel.
Go ahead. Before we jump off Nantex, unless you're going to stay on Nantex, is I got a question for the mathematicians here that do more of that math. Is it better to use their tractor to reposition sporadically and just basically only when you think you're not going to get shot and try to keep your three die attack, or to go ahead and use Gravatic on an grab, whatever you call it,
Gravatic deflection?
Yeah, use that one on all of them and basically have two agility with base double reroll. If you're at range three, you're going to get three rerolls because all of them are tractored. Like, mathematically, what works best? And I would say also just the other bonus is that you get to spend your focus on offense, because on defense you've got some type of modification with the rerolls.
Yeah. So
the issue mathematically is Gravitic is 5 points, so mm-hmm. you can't get you can't get six of these if you want to maintain the I-4. You could do, I think, the I-3 No, you can't even do the I3, because I was thinking you could do all the I3s, but one of them's Gorgle, because he's one less point. You would lose one of the Gravitics. So I think you go all in on the offense and just have enough bodies in that higher initiative with the six and crack shot.
Yeah, I think the guy that did it with Gravatic Deflector was the one that had four plus a Solus One Grievous, because that, so, that's how he covered. So it was five ships, but that's the way he played it. That seemed interesting to me.
From Dion, what obstacles were taken by most of these six Nantex lists?
I saw mostly rocks.
Okay.
I saw mostly rocks out there. And I don't know what the reason for that is. That'd be something to go through. I actually don't know off the top of my head.
You can always barrel roll yourself off the rock if you hit it.
Why not take Gas Cloud?
This is very true. This is very true.
It's hard to shoot your turrets at aces hiding through gas clouds.
Yeah. There's pros and cons to all of it for sure.
Yeah, so here is something I have when it comes to Gravatic Deflection versus these offensive weapons. I feel that the strength of the numbers, being able to bring six of them, I think tends to favor the offensive upgrades rather than defense. It's not about staying alive. It's about having all those guns pointed at something, being able to delete them. You bring in those crack shots, I think you need to get them off in order to really push through a lot of the things that you're worried about. Now, one of the things for people who are planning on taking on Nantex, you essentially have, I was writing down here, trying to come up with, what are the tools that you can start to explore to try to fight against Nantex, especially if that's something that you're either really worried about or you have people in your league that are planning on playing it. Will hit the fact that they don't have any shields. So bringing things that take advantage of that. Darth Vader really likes Juicy Hole quite a bit. Proton bombs, trajectory simulator, throwing those proton bombs. Those Nantex want nothing to do with that. Of course, you got to make sure that you don't waste those because they can barrel roll. So you got to be choice on those decisions on when to throw them. Initiative, right? They are initiative 4, which is pretty good. But if you have either other things at initiative 4 that will move after them to be able to take advantage of some repositioning, that could be good. Or just looking at initiative 5 and 6 as well. You could try to play the bid game, which Marcel was talking about, as the race to the bottom, right? If you really want to move last, you got to start dropping points, dropping ships. We'll find out where that number actually ends up, because right now we're at 198. You know, you take off one predator for one person, they're at 197. The other person says, you know what, I don't want anything. I'll just take the crack shots. It can start to snowball really quickly. And then the other part is the flying. I think that so Bohan played it really, really well. He had a couple of different formations and approaches. He could keep them all six together. And we saw also him take them in two different fire teams of three. So someone who really knows what they're doing, it might be a little bit more difficult, but maybe against a less experienced player, if you can take advantage of the fact that they must turn that turret and always be on the opposite side, which we did see happen a couple of times in that game with the list that had the Gravetic deflectors, the other player just took advantage of the fact that he was forced. If he wanted the reposition, he wasn't going to be able to shoot, and made him choose between a rock and a hard place. So just really interesting. We don't have the answers right now. This is all just kind of theoretical. We're going to have to see how the meta shakes out. We have 2 weeks for players to look at it. And of course, we're going to be on the other side of the pond. The other one focuses on, we're going to be in London, quote unquote, for that event starting in London time. So we have a lot more European players. And we're going to see what flavor they bring and how this affected this meta, 218 people playing, affects their decision making and the evolution over the next couple weeks. Because we have 2 weeks in between each of these events, and I think it's going to be really interesting. Now, before we move on to our next question of the week and the other couple of things that I want to talk about stats-wise for this meta, is there anything else we want to hit with this top 16, guys? Anything else you want to put out there?
I would just reiterate that a lot of people's concerns on the top of their mind is Nantex right now. Mm-hmm. You should be prepared to look at tech for anti-stress, because Sloan is showing up in variations, as we mentioned before, both on Rack, on could be put on the Lambdas, but we've also seen a lot on Reapers, variations of squads. It's not like a you must have this in your list to be successful. It's more of a maybe Ray starts taking Corsella in resistance. Maybe FO, if they bring a couple named or consider bringing named FO pilots, maybe they bring Muse. Stuff like that to think about. As always, force charges are good. They're not, they don't have to worry about stress.
Mm-hmm.
Vader hates it, though.
That's true. Now, a couple of the last things I want to bring up when it comes to the stats. So looking at the top 16, the faction breakdown, and I'm just going to go ahead and slide off around our notes so those of you who are watching can just read it from here. So top 16, we had 6 Empire lists, 3 Separatists, 2 First Order, 2 Scum, 1 Rebel, 1 Republic, 1 Resistance. When we widen that out to the top 32, we have 8 Empire, 6 Separatists, 5 Scum, 4 Rebels, 4 Resistance, 2 First Order, and 2 Republic. And in the entire event, and this is where I just find really interesting, look at the success rate of Separatists. Total in the event, we only had 18 Separatist lists. 6 of them, a little under half, make it into the top 32 and are getting those Coruscant invites. It's really interesting to see that. Marcel, in our pre-production meeting, commented on it. I find it really, he said something along the lines, I find it interesting that so few people play them, but they usually do pretty well. Something like that?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's been the same theme since from the beginning, really. Maybe not the very first round, but after that first round of... you know, after the first points change, they've been at the top consistently. I think a lot of people, like myself, I just don't like them. I don't have fun with it. But I recognize that if I wanted to make the cut, the flying and practicing with, obviously you're just not going to show up without practicing, but practicing and flying a Separatist list, your best bet, because they are consistently making like 20, between 20 to 33% of the players that play it typically make the cut. It just is what it is. And look at the FO. You got 29, 2 out of 29 made the cut. Just, I think it's, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't have fun with them typically. But if I wanted to make the cut really bad and it was the last chance, I'm like, you know, let's throw Hail Mary out there maybe.
Start thinking about it. And for our audio listeners who are listening later, we'll go through this total event. So Scum had 45 total representations, Empire 41, Resistance 31, Rebel 35, First Order 29, Republic 18, and Separatist 18. So, man, just look at that difference between Republic and Separatist. The points going up for the Republic over the last couple ones has really hurt their cut rate. It's something that has been going down overall. Of course, we have coming up another wave here in we're how many weeks away now? 4 weeks before we get the LAT into the Republic, and after that we got the ETA-2 coming as well. So with FFG canceling, this circles right back to our news right in the beginning, with FFG canceling organized play and not being able to officially look at online play because we don't exist for them officially, we're ignored on purpose. Do we think there will be much changes? Are we going to get another points change in December? Is that going to happen, do we think? Because for them, what data do they have? Is it they're just going to be like, hey, we just thought you'd like something new? Is that what they give us?
You can always pass it off as play testing.
Sure. Yeah.
Rather, we may see less of a points update and more of a hyperspace curation change.
True.
Plus all the new ships incoming too. So, you know, maybe not shake up the points on everything we've had for a bit without a lot of data, but shake up what the hyperspace format has, and obviously adding in the ships. And I mean, I don't know if this is maybe how FFG considers it, but they may decide not to adjust certain points on ships until other ships become available in their faction, up or down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would think they set things up like we've talked in the past, how quick draw going up recently, balancing out the SF gunner, like maybe there's something with the Z shuttle that's coming that makes quick draw potentially concerning if down too many points or at a certain point cost. So, you know, we have already thought that they have future-proofed certain things, but maybe at the same time they time-gate it.
Yeah, could be. Could be. Now, we're going to move on to what is going to feel like random, but, you know, we always do our question of the week, but it's something I think that's really interesting, and I think it's a nice pair into the fact that we are, because we're running essentially our own premier events here online, something that maybe newer players on the tournament scene might not be thinking of, or maybe even veterans. So the question came from Trooper, and this is, by the way, you can submit questions of the week and lists of the week, which we're about to get to, on our Discord in the submissions only section. Just drop it in there and we curate them from there for our podcast. Now, Trooper asked, given the controversy in baseball, now if you don't sports ball very much, we will explain this here in a minute, and here's the article that he references. Given the controversy in baseball right now regarding Fernando Tatis Jr. violating one of Major League Baseball's archaic unwritten rules, this makes me wonder, as X-Wing players, do we have any unwritten rules? So I'll paraphrase what happened in this baseball game. Essentially, the Padres, this gentleman's team, was up 10-3 in the eighth inning. There's only, at this point, five outs left in the game total. And there were three balls, and the pitcher essentially lobbed a fastball in there, and he hit a grand slam. And it, like the etiquette most of the time in baseball, especially at the major league level, is at three balls and you're in a slaughter right now, you just take the pitch. You don't swing on it. You're not expected to. And he destroyed the pitch and got a grand slam. So people got upset. The opposing team threw the ball behind the following pitcher. Batter. You know, a bunch of stuff. So the question, as X-Wing players, and I had never really thought about this, is, are there unwritten rules in X-Wing, or if there are, what are they? Anything come to mind immediately? Will, I see you're already unmuted. You got something for me? What do you think?
It's we're very finicky about where that dice lands.
Okay.
Right? Like on the table? Cool. Whatever. On the floor? No, never. Never on the floor. If it's cocked die is always the biggest one, where I think that's just basically, if there's a question if that die is cocked, you should re-roll it.
There you go.
Which is not like other other dice games maybe, but it seems very particular, like, for X-Wing players, very particular about where they roll their dice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That is, the floor not counting is definitely an unwritten rule in most places. I have been in one game where the player, like, literally, like, just, it was a wild row and said, like, wherever it lands. And I was like, what? Started playing golf,
no,
like,
never.
Golf rules all of a sudden. I was like, what? What?
Yeah, no.
So, in that case, I mean, obviously, where most of us are playing right now on Tabletop Simulator, that doesn't quite apply. But for instance, like, if you're on stream, it is written on the table if you read it.
That is a written rule.
It is a written rule, but not an official rule that the dice have to be in the box, for instance, when it regards to box. I would say one unwritten rule that comes to mind for me, I think maybe these start sliding more into etiquette, you know, would be just to make sure that you're doing your best to keep a good pace in the game. Now, I'm not saying that you need to rush your decisions, but I think if the thought in your mind says it is advantageous to me to slow down, I should probably slow down. That for me, and I think Will, you were talking about it a little bit as well, is that like that introduces a bit of feel bad. And I know that in the X-Wing community, for the most part, the experiences I have had is people just like, let's play the game, let's have fun. That's a thought for me. What, anything from you, Ryan?
No, it's hard to find like an unwritten rule for me, because it's between something that's either already written or established or eventually was, or something that's kind of just a superstition that's like more of a my own thing. Or but like unwritten rules tough. I will say, for people who do follow baseball, Fernando Tatis should hit whatever he wants.
I mean, I agree. I will tell you, I agree. I agree on that one. I'm like, hey, you lobbed me there. Let's pad the stats. Let's go.
your pitcher, do your job. Don't
let
him hit it.
I think there's a few. I think some of the most obvious ones, it's an unwritten rule. Maybe it is written, but people ignore it, is basically keep your hands to yourself. Keep your hands where I can see them. Don't be finicking around with your dial. Don't, you know, if you're the kind to have a nervous twitch, just grab a pen or something and click a pen, like find something else to do other than playing with your dials. That's an easy way to get yourself in trouble.
Don't be this guy, right? The like, just keep picking it up and looking at it. Like while I'm moving my ships, you keep touching your dial and picking it up.
Yeah. So don't play with anything on the table while the game is in session. Another unwritten rule is kind of, you know, going back to the golf reference, is and this also maybe in tennis, is if you're a spectator, just be quiet. Don't bother the people that are playing, especially if it's a, you know, in the cut or in the premier event. Just keep quiet. There's probably a couple more, but I would say that. And also, I think another unwritten rule is if you mess it up, own up to the consequences, I think is what it is. Like some people get nervous and you might tip a ship over. If you tip the ship over and it was your mistake, it's kind of an unwritten rule, like, okay, your opponent gets to, you know, your opponent's like, this is where you were. You can't get to finish and say, no, I had arc. Well, no, it was your mistake. You tipped it over. You just got to kind of live with it. You know, that's, so I think those are some that are not essentially rules, but that's kind of a given, I think, for me.
I think I figured one out, and this might be a hot contention point.
Hot take. Let's go.
It's not a hot take, but I feel like, especially with the people I play with, this is common, but I don't know around the entire community if this is something that's common. So in most cases, it's not much of a missed opportunity thing. It's more of a, when I play against someone and I know what they were going to do, like that, like obviously end phase, you were going to recloak whisper, or obviously like you were going to take an action. Like you wouldn't forget to take an action at all on your ship. Like I'll be like, oh wait, do your thing that you're supposed to do, 'cause I knew you were going to do it. Like there's no like mental reason why you wouldn't have done this thing with this ship, obviously. So even if by rule you could have called a missed opportunity on them, I don't feel like it's in my competitiveness to take that mistake if it was something so clearly going to be done. So that's an unwritten rule for me that I've used, and I've seen other people do that. It's like, if they were going to do the no-duh thing, like, just let them do it. Like, sure, technically it's a missed opportunity, but like, come on. Like, we know certain things that happen are like, given, no-brainers.
Right. That actually really is a hot-button issue, because I've seen people very... This is very contested, because view number one is yours, and I would say that all four of us are in that position as well when we play, because we've played against each other, and I've seen you guys play with other people where it's like, oh, hey, oh, I forgot my action. Oh, just take a focus. It's fine. Like, if it's not, there are certain situations where it's like, oh, you know, we got into the end phase and you didn't do a reposition. Like, I'm not going to let you do a reposition because you've seen all the ships move. But if it is something that you could just go back and add and it really doesn't change anything, like it was implied, It's fine. The other opposite side is the competitors who say, part of the game is remembering all the things. My job is not to help you. I know that seems really harsh, but some people like that. And the issues happen when I think the person on one end of the spectrum who say part of the game, part of the competitive game is remembering all your stuff. If you miss it, it's your problem. And the people who say, I'm just here to have fun, I would give you any mistake you had. When they meet, that is usually not a great experience overall. Because what ends up happening is, and I've seen it happen, and it's happened even to me, where I give my opponent, you know, an oopsie, call it an oopsie, you give it to them, and then they don't give it back to you. And then that, all of a sudden, that completely changes the feel and the dynamic of the game. And I know all three of you gentlemen have been in those places, because I have heard you vent to me. You have spilled your hearts to me, and I have heard them. So it's really interesting, and I think that right there could be its own episode. That could be a series talking about that one idea. And yeah, that's a question. That is one. I don't know how to answer it. So,
well, had a question directed right at me from the chat asking, well, would you have the same mindset if you were in the world's final? Totally. Like, I'm not gonna, like, you forgot to recloak Whisper. We're already in our dials. You don't get to cloak her. Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel like that's a legit win for me. Like, I was
about to say the exact same thing. I wanna win by being bested, not by you forgetting something.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think, again, because I know you guys, for me, when I finish a game, I don't want to have anything on my conscience, right? I want to know I won the game. Great. Even if I rolled on you and I trashed you, as long as it was fair and we played a clean game, I'm not going to feel bad about it. I might be like, oh, man, that sucks. You know, and especially somebody who needs help and wants to learn. Like, that's a completely different situation. But if we're playing and it's fair, that's what I want. I want to end the game with a clean conscience, having had fun. And I played X-Wing, so it's a good day. Right? That's usually what we're looking for. So, yeah,
it sounds like we'll need to do a whole segment at some point in the future. We are getting a lot of questions in chat. And I don't know if we can address them all.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. There's a lot of them. We're gonna have to leave them just because, you know, we're recording the podcast here. But that's maybe something we can start to explore during on Wednesday and Saturday as we hang out for League Night and squad. What am I saying here? I was just about to reveal something. Flight Club. I'll leave it at that. Let's go ahead and look.
I thought you were about to plug my YouTube channel.
I mean, yeah, go. Squad up. Go squad up. Get your squadrons content now. All right, let's go ahead and do these lists of the week. We're looking at three of our viewers. We're going to start with Sebon00. He sent us a first order list. Let's go ahead and pull that up on the screen for everybody to look. Now, if you're new to the list of the week segment, you can submit them on our Discord. We take a look at your list. We tweak them, or we say they're fine, and the rule is for us, though, we try to keep the idea of the list and not really change more than one ship type in there. So the preface from the player is, here's another FO idea. Let me know your thoughts. The TIE BA can take that deplete to target lock as needed. And they can, of course, get also the target lock from Lehuse. Some little other shenanigans in there. What do you think? All right, looks like Will is going to take a stab at this one.
All right, so the first thing I'm going to do, and I think I would do this regardless of how I would change this list, but I'm going to actually swap out one of those interesters. And I want a Typho. I want Lieutenant Revis. Oh, well, yeah. Fair enough.
I completely forgot to unmute myself. Super strong. Let's try that again. Write down the time code. 1 second. You're going to have to edit that one out. Very nice. I haven't had to do that in a really long time. 129. Maybe I leave it in. Who knows? It'll be fun. So Lieutenant Lehuse ability is, while you perform an attack, you may spend another friendly ship's lock on the defender to reroll any of your defense dice. He has Proud Tradition, and Special Forces Gunner. And then we also have three First Order Provocateurs. That's the Initiative 3 TIE BA with the Power Cells. Those are the regenning mods that those TIE BAs can take. And we're at 199 points. So, Will, you said delete one of those. And what am I putting in here?
I want another lieutenant, a foe called Lieutenant Rivas.
Got him.
Lieutenant Rivas, very cheap I-1 blocker, fantastic little foe. 2 points more than the base as well for what seems like a simple ability. After a ship at range 1 to 2, so it can't be the one you blocked actually, finds a red or orange token. If you have that ship locked, you may acquire a lock on that ship. So anytime somebody K-turns linked action, pinpoint tractors array, if they're a Nantex, jams some stuff, I don't know, that you would be able to get a lock onto them. Now that free lock is essentially able to power up Lahoose without any action expenditure. So it's a really great piece just to fly around next to Lahoose and hope that, you know, people will get red tokens. Now, that's where the provocateurs come in with the original combo of the fine-tuned thrusters, which lets you take a token to get a target lock. Target lock happens to be a red token. So when you lock, Rivas locks, which means Lahoose locks. I did that to get a bunch more points because, honestly, I don't like the provocateurs. The I-3 is not an ace. They used to be. Back in the Inquisitors used to be considered aces. But I-4s are real ships now, so we got to get pretty high up. And I'm just going to grab... I don't know. What do you guys think about Ember? Is Ember ever worth it? Or should I go right for Von Raug?
Ember is 7 points more than an I-3. And a very conditional ability, so no.
Bomb Rock it is. So we're going to get Hollow and the Major in there. Now, I went over our points because we got these expensive power cells. And I'm going to take the one off of Hollow. He doesn't need it. He's going to give that deplete or strain to Rivas. Because if Rivas isn't shooting, throw him a deplete. If Lahoose is going to be shooting rear arcs, give him the stress because he can just clear it and keep shooting the rear arc. Anyways, we're keeping Proud Tradition on Hollow, and I don't know much about Von Raug, but I know he prefers Daredevil. And I don't know. I guess we'll keep the cells. They're fun. And I think they do actually work pretty well for the Major. Because you could, it's not just healing the way, you know, you can, before you gain an unlocked token, you can stress yourself to gain a stress token. So, essentially, if you ever get ioned or strained, like with your taking a lock ability, you could just take a stress instead of taking the strain. Or you could run away, which is also pretty cool. And ends up, you know what? Wait, those are 3 points. Or 9 points? No, get rid of them.
chuck it. I was one. I was like, well, they're kind of expensive.
Wow. I did not realize how much we could get instead. I want, this is something I would recommend flying. I want one of those BAs to be Pattern Analyzer Afterburners Hollow.
Ooh.
Man. Some people like the Major. I like Hollow. All right, so. But this is essentially still going to give you the same thing that you're looking for, is the combo with Lahoose. So you can double mod both of your offenses for your interceptors and double mod your offense for Lahoose as well. And, oh yeah, you could mod both shots with the Special Forces Gunner. I normally run a missile on them, but it's kind of redundant. So... that's what I ended up choosing. Maybe I can be proven wrong someday, but I'm not a fan of the provocateurs, and I'd rather have a nice Rivas blocker in there instead and get some real use out of the interceptors. Make them true aces.
No Proud Tradition on Hollow?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Sorry, I'm making...
Triple action.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, Proud Tradition, Pattern Analyzer, Afterburners. If you've never flown that ship, try it out. Man.
Do what you want, man. That's what that ship is.
A ship. Yeah. You know what's really nice? Doing whatever you want and then K-turning every round. You can target lock or barrel roll with Pattern Analyzer or evade. That'd be cool, too. Crowd Tradition is your perform action and afterburners because you can do it even while stressed. Man. Just play every round. Or what's the other one? Sloop.
Yep. Yeah. So the final form here that Will has given us, Sibon, is Lieutenant Lahuse with Proud Tradition and Special Forces. That's untouched. And then the rest of it, we got a completely different dance down here. We got Von Reg with Daredevil. We got Hollow with Proud Tradition, Pattern Analyzers, and Afterburners. And Lieutenant Revis, naked, you're at 199 points. I do like the changes there. I feel like you got a lot of value there, Will. A lot of value. So our next list comes from Tom Riddle, the Dark Lord himself. And the preface is, I've really enjoyed this list and think it has some good potential. This is a Rebel list that I believe Marcel is going to be taking a look at. And we have here Alexander Callis in the VCX with Intimidation, Dorsal Turret, Zeb, Lando Calrissian Crew, Agile Gunner, and the Ghost title. Ezra in the Sheathapede with Leia Organa and the Phantom title, and two Phoenix Squadron A-Wings of the Initiative 2s with Daredevil. So very thematic list, by the way, for anybody who doesn't remember, because Callus isn't played too often. Alexander Callus' ability in the VCX says, while you defend, if the attacker modified any attack dice, you may roll one additional defense die, essentially bringing that from a 0 agility ship to a 1 agility ship. What are your thoughts, Marcel?
All right. I like the ships, so I'm actually not going to change any of the actual ships. I like the way it's put together there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 10 points is a lot, especially when you got low initiative ships, including an initiative 4. So let's start throwing some stuff on here. Let's start by taking Alexander Callis and changing it to Hera. It's just much better ship. Simple as that.
Bam.
All right, so then once you've got that, you know what's... So let's do a little bit swap here. So Leia is good because the only one that really takes advantage of Leia in this list is Hera, because Ezra actually wants to be stressed. Ezra gets benefit out of being stressed. So being that Hera is the only one that takes advantage of Leia, let's get rid of Leia and change it into Chopper on Hera, so Hera can still take an action. You take a damage, but it's all right. You got 14 of them.
Which one are we moving? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Taking Lando off.
Lando.
So Leia
for Chopper,
and taking Lando off, putting Chopper in there, and let's throw a hull upgrade in there as well, just so we can get a hull upgrade on Hera, so we can get an upgrade. By the way, this is hyperspace, so if you're wondering why it doesn't have Saw Gerrera on it. Because it's hyperspace.
Mm-hmm.
So he had Lando. I actually like Lando in this list, but I like Lando on Ezra. So we're going to put Lando and R4 on Ezra, because Ezra, you want to be able to K-turn, give yourself stress, get more use out of your focus token, and then you never know. You might end up with like a double evade and a force that counts as 2. Ezra, or focus evade, or focus force, you can end up with some pretty interesting combinations there, and it adds a little bit of fun, I think. At least for me, it adds a little bit of fun. All right, and that gives us a few points to play with. Let's throw the first Phoenix Squadron and upgrade that to Arvel. And Arvel loves this intimidation, so let's throw so you can have 2 intimidation ships on there at the same time. And then also you've got marksmanship. So let's throw marksmanship. And the reason I like marksmanship on Arvel is because, one, you're intimidating them. And usually Arvel's like right up there at range 1. So Mark's Bullseye is almost always going to be available. Another nice thing is that if you bump Arvel, if you move Arvel first and you bump him, you've got Ezra that's moving at the same initiative.
Mm-hmm.
You can just go ahead and coordinate an action into Arvel, so it's a little bit easier for them, for him to get in there and do his thing. And then the last one, just with the points, I was going to throw Jake in the... We've got a couple points off here, so let's see what you're doing. Oh, yeah, you're going to throw Jake instead of the other Phoenix Squadron, but get rid of the Agile Gunner. And that should bring you to 199.
199. So your final form here is Hera.
Yeah.
Sorry, was there something else you wanted to change?
Yeah, no, I was saying that with the Agile Gunner, you really don't need it that much because it's a two-die gun. It's a two-die gun, and mostly you really... And plus, Zeb Aurelia doesn't work out of the side, mm-hmm. or doesn't work out of the turret. It only works with the primary. So, don't worry about your dorsal turret. Dorsal turret is an oopsie. Oops, I made a mistake.
All right, so our final form here for you, Tom, is... Hera Syndulla with Intimidation, Dorsal Turret, Chopper Crew, Zeb Crew, Hull Upgrade, Ghost Title, Sheathipede. We have Ezra with Lando R4 and the Phantom Title. And we got a couple of A-Wings. We have Arvel with Marksmanship Intimidation and Jake with nothing at 199 points. And reminder to everybody, this is a hyperspace list, which is why it feels a little funny. I saw a couple of like, but what about advanced sensors? You can't. It's not in hyperspace, right? So you have a couple of limited choices here. Also, no Saw Gerrera. So a different flavor here. Really interesting. Last but not least, General Kenobi 2005 brought us a Republic list. And here is the preface. Ryan's going to take this one. So it says, before the last points change, I was flying a Republic 5-ship list that involved... quite a few ships. However, after the last points change, it was no longer possible to fly that original list without major cutbacks, so I made this one. Hopefully, I can use the V-Wing instead when it comes out later on. So here is General Kenobi's list. We have Plo Koon with R4 Astromech and CLT. Obi-Wan Kenobi with that same loadout, R4 CLT. We have two Gold Squadron Troopers and a Red Squadron Y-Wing with Ion Cannon Turret, Clone Commander Cody, and R4 Astromech for a total of 196 points.
All right, so I think the one thing we can definitely do is I think Clone Commander Cody just doesn't see a ton of value in this list. I get that if the Y-Wing misses, then the Torrents can shoot at a ship that's strained, but that's probably like a very particular game state, because I could definitely see times that same initiative, you may want the Torrents to shoot something first, because maybe they only have one thing in arc, and the Y-Wing has two things in arc, and the Y-Wing has a decision, depending on what the Torrent does. So we're dropping Clone Commander Cody. We're also dropping all the R4 Astromechs. We can think about that later, because this Y-Wing, if it's to maybe take a little bit of heat off of the Jedi and give the opponent another potential target that has some consistent firepower, we're going to turn that Red Squadron Bomber into broadside.
Bam.
And in doing so... we have 7 points left, so let's just throw seismic charges on broadside. And look, you got the same 4-point bid they had before. Probably something that they may want to stick with, having a little bit of a bid. On the other side of the spectrum, in more of their detailed notes here, they mentioned that they had to take out Rick.
Mm-hmm. In their original list, yeah.
Yep. So, I think... a option, instead of saying if they use Torrents and obvious and Jedi and Rick, an option to go towards instead of a beefy ship, if they wanted to be more familiar with a faster ship, you could put a third CLT Jedi in there, and your choice between Luminar or Ahsoka Tano. Both can have calibrated Both have very valuable abilities, Luminara being a little more on the defensive side, and Ahsoka supportive, either offensive or defensive, theoretically. Ahsoka's been seen in CLT used squads more often, where her value can be spread across the list a bit more than 7B lists. So it's kind of your flavor to taste. I'd say either broadside with ion cannon turret and seismic charges, or your choice of Ahsoka or Luminara with CLT.
Fantastic. So this final form here, this version here with Ahsoka, we have Plo Koon CLT, Obi-Wan CLT, Ahsoka CLT, and a couple of Torrents. Another way I was thinking about going with this, Ryan, when I was looking at it, I was inspired by Nick Tobin and his list that we saw him fly during Corellia. He brought a Y-Wing with 7 Fleet Gunner and a bomb, and then just reloaded every turn and was just pumping up everybody's shots, giving that additional die. That's maybe another way you could have gone. You would have had to tweak a couple other things to make the points work out and fit the bomb in there. But that's just another flavor, I think, that this could have taken. I do think the broadside is probably the better Y-Wing, but again, if you wanted to try something else. Super cool.
If you wanted to take broadside, you can just take broadside with dorsal and 7 fleet instead of the ion cannon. You have 1 point left for the bid. That does fit. Broadside doesn't have the 3-die turret anymore, but it still has a really consistent 2-die turret.
Absolutely. Well, I want to say thank you to everybody who joined us today. It was absolutely great time. I want to remind you that we stream every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. And though we don't have a premiere event going on this Saturday, we do have Gold Squadron Flight Club coming from 5 to 9 p.m. And this Wednesday, Gold Squadron League Night, our X-Wing Night. That's when I and the boys get to play from 6 to 10. Looking forward to it. After watching and talking about X-Wing, I need to get my hands on some ships. Even though they're digital hands, it's still my hands. All right, everybody, thanks for watching. We'll talk to you later. Gold Squadron out.